Hi, I'm Will Stein and welcome to Geography Island Jams. This podcast is in the same style as the BBC Radio 4 series Desert Island Discs, whereby in each episode I ask my interviewee what 8 songs, book and luxury item they would take with them if they are stranded on a desert island. For rights reasons, the music has not been included in this podcast. You can find links to the songs either on the Geography and Environment website or on the Geography Island Jams Spotify music account. I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Geography Island Jams. Joining me today, I have the LSE Deputy Chief Operating Officer, Joanne Hay. So Joanne has been a member of the LSE community for more than 26 years. From starting as a comparative politics master student to, since 2018, becoming LSE's first Deputy Chief Operating Officer, it's fair to say Joanne really has had the full LSE experience. In her role as Deputy Chief Operating Officer, Joanne has been involved in a number of business change projects around the LSE, including the Assessment Services Change Project, where in-year resits were offered for the first time in 2020. She works in close partnership with the Students' Union, most notably with the SU General Secretary, co-chairing the Welcome Steering Group and the Homelessness Partnership with St. Mungo's. She has responsibility and involvement in a number of areas around the school, such as business continuity, health and safety, the Business Improvement Unit, and Professional Services Staff Development. Joanne also chairs the annual Values and Practice Awards for the professional service staff. This year, the VIP Awards received over 800 nominations for staff from around the university. In addition to developing the PSS, Joanne is passionate about building high-performing teams and enhancing student experience at the LSE. Prior to her role now, Joanne has worked in a number of jobs around the LSE, including sub-editor for the LSE Faxing Service, leading the director's office, and she was the departmental manager of the management department, which she held for 12 years. Before coming to the London School of Economics and Political Science, Joanne did her BSc in Economics and Politics at Swansea University. Outside of the LSE, Joanne is a keen sportswoman. She enjoys running, swimming, tennis, and is currently an avid ping pong player. Finally, Joanne's childhood, like the international student body, was a very international childhood. After being born in Barnet, North London, due to her father's work, she moved between Uganda, New Zealand, and Cambridge before finally settling down in Oxford at the age of 12. So without any further ado, welcome Joanne.
Hello, Will. It's lovely to be here.
First, I wanted to ask about your childhood. As I said, born in Barnet, North London. So what was it like moving between all the countries and, even continents?
Well, I guess most of it I don't really remember. So I was very young when we went to Uganda. We were kicked out by Idi Amin. I think we then came back to London. And then when I was about 5, we went over to New Zealand and then stayed there for only a short while. I think that was my parents trying to go back to their roots because they came from New Zealand. I was the first Pommy born in England for a few generations. I don't think it quite worked out. So back we came to England and settled down in Cambridge for a few years before we moved to Oxford. It was quite a disruptive childhood. I never established roots like other people did, I know. My partner was born in East London, went to school in East London, and is still friends with all of his primary school friends. I don't remember any of my primary school friends, let alone my primary school. So it was only when I got to Oxford that I really started to settle down and establish some roots and make good friends, some of whom I still know.
So from your time growing up, do you have any most memorable experiences?
So, Will, we lived in a very well-to-do road in Oxford. We bought the house when it was flats, and my father spent years and years and years renovating. And we had a very long garden, and there was a vegetable patch in it, as well as a cherry tree. And I spent endless summers pitting cherries and eating cherry this and cherry that. We also had silver beet, which is a New Zealand equivalent of spinach. And I will eat neither silver beet nor cherries ever again in my life. I cannot stand the taste of them, having had so many in my life. I lived next door to my headmaster, which did not bode well when I was caught playing around with Bunsen burners in the physics lab. I was in so much trouble. And little did I know, but my next door neighbour one was actually Tom Hollander, who is the famous actor in Pirates of the Caribbean and many other productions. So I was very fortunate to have lived in that road. I never knew it at the time, but it did me very well in the long run. We actually had Ted Heath lived in our road as well, the former Prime Minister. And the woman who established Bravissimo, which is, I was not going to mention in the interview, she was also down our road. So it's just incredible the amount of people who came out of that.
Oh, wow. The road to be on. And how do you think moving around so much as a kid, do you think it's impacted who you are today?
Somebody once said to me, is it any wonder, Joanne, that you've stayed at LSE for so long, having had such a varied location-wise of when you were a child? And I think that's probably true. I think I like stability. I think I probably craved for that when I was a child. And I think I found at LSE. LSE is my home.
You mentioned growing up, you wanted to be a writer, but due to your father's persuasion, took math and physics A-level, which probably influenced university choices. But do you think writing still on the cards for something you could do in the future?
Well, I just don't think I have the imagination. I've thought and I've tried, and I've tried to think of plots and scenarios. During lockdown, I've become very interested in crime, not particularly high level crime, I have to say, but just crime. I love the Lewis trilogy by Peter May, which has got a good storyline in it. And I was thinking, like, could I do something like that? Maybe I could write a story about LSE at some point, you know, since I have so much time spent at the university. I've certainly got some stories up my sleeve. I'm sure many of them could be not publishable.
Yeah, well, I'll see what I can get out of you. But first, can you tell me what's the first song you're taking with you?
My first song is Killer's Mr. Brightside. I don't have a particular reason for this. I just love the song. I'm actually quite passionate about Killers per se. And unfortunately, my partner, I can play the album through more than once in a single sitting and sing all the way through very badly. So that's my first choice.
And I should have asked before, actually, but how was it difficult putting the songs together? What was your reasoning behind the playlist? Because, you know, some people go through and have extensive reasons, but other people just choose songs that get the most excited.
As you know, Will, I was desperate to have more than eight, but you insisted it had to be the eight. So I've stuck with the eight, but I found it impossible to whittle down. My partner and I listened to a wide variety of music. And so it was just really difficult trying to get the different types of music, getting a bit of classical, a bit of jazzy type music in there. So it was nigh on impossible. It was like the VIP awards, Will, nigh on impossible to actually shortlist.
So yeah, moving on to LSE. So after finishing your master's, you took up the job as sub-editor for the then LSE faxing service. What was that job and what did it entail?
So it was actually a collaboration with a financial company who gave advice on finances. And we provided political articles about politics of countries in South America, Latin America. So we gave political analysis and I edited those articles. And I'm sure many of you don't even know what a fax is, but in those days, these faxes would be coming out of printer type things in different across the globe every morning with the investment and political horizons on them. So that was my very first job. I was probably a band three equivalent. And I started the job the day after I finished my dissertation, which meant I hadn't slept all night because I was so late completing my dissertation.
Oh, wow. God, I can imagine that being intense. It's hard enough. Yeah, you know, recovering the next day, let alone having to have that logistical challenge of faxing things.
I was offered a couple of PhD places when I was at LSE. I had a couple of academics say, would you do a PhD? And the answer to that was absolutely no. Everything I do is right up to the wire. If you give me a deadline, I'll meet it 10 minutes before the deadline. So I would never have been able to do a PhD. It would have been the last year would have been absolutely intolerable because all I would have done is worked.
Yeah, you can't do that with 100,000 words. That's definitely not a...
No way. No way.
Another job which you did is probably one, took up a substantial amount of time at LSE, but you were the departmental manager for the management department for 12 years. So what was that experience like?
It was excellent overall. So when I ran the director's office, Howard Davies, who was then director, wanted to set up a business school, which was not within, never got through academic board. So we set up a management department. So it was four former departments in the school, covering HR, organisational behaviour, economics, information systems. So this was a new department set up, I can't remember which year, 2006, I think. And formally established in 2008, I was interim department manager because I'd worked with Howard on the development of the management department. It was a natural progression for me. So I took that on and I saw, you know, I saw new programs developed and implemented. I saw executive education established and offered to our students. We grew, professional services grew from 13 staff when I started to 55 when I left. LSE management department is a bit of a money-making machine, so I had loads of flexibility. I'm sure Sam will be very, very jealous of the flexibility I had. You know, nothing was, we looked after our student population as much as we can. We were passionate about our student body. But I think there was something I never realized was that you're quite siloed when you're in a department and you don't always look outside. And there's a real inequity between what we offer our students. And I think there still is. And if you have money, you can do way more than if you don't have money. And that's something that does bother me. And I would like to see changed in due course.
So as your time as departmental manager for the management department, do you have any most memorable experiences?
Well, I think it has to be meeting the Queen. So the Queen actually opened the new academic building in 2008. And a number of us were offered the opportunity to meet with her. So we had students, staff and professional services, sorry, academics and professional services staff. And it was just amazing when the lift doors opened. You know, I'm not a particular royalist, but wow, the presence was incredible. And we were advised that we could either shake the Queen's hand or curtsy. So me being me, I decided to do both by mistake. And I saw the Queen coming towards me and I thought, oh, no, 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 no. And she said, of course, the obvious question is, do you enjoy being at LSE? And I was like, I love being at LSE. And the director at the time, Howard Davies, who I had worked for previously, was just rolling his eyes at me because he's like, knows that I love LSE. Anyway, it was a really memorable experience. And, you know, we were very nervous, of course, but it was an incredible, incredible day. And we had a massive party afterwards. But what was also really lovely and touching was the night before the visit, I realized that we should all be wearing poppies. And my partner, who is a cab driver, actually went to numerous supermarkets to try and pick up poppies so that I had a bag of poppies the next morning so I could give them out. So I've got pictures of me with wearing my poppy, which I'm very proud and grateful to my partner for doing that lovely gesture.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've got any stories I can top that one, meeting the Queen. I thought meeting Manoush was mine, came to bed. And then, yeah, I heard that you had a one-of-a-kind leaving video. Can you just tell me a bit more about that?
Oh, that video, I watch it still when I'm having a bit of a down moment. My team, my very large team, put together a most incredible video based around me, Joanne. And it has my passion for tennis, my passion for going to the senior dining room, my very messy office. They all stood on outside the NAB for the final song, which was just incredible. And how they managed to do it without me knowing, I have no idea. I only once caught them at it when they were in my office, filming my very messy office to show how busy my diary was. And I caught them then, I thought, something's up here. But little did I know until they revealed it at my leaving party. And it was just incredible. And how wonderful that people thought so much to produce something which must have taken months of effort and work. And they even captured my hate of Nando's.
And the whole department was involved in it. It was all, was it 50?
All professional services staff, yeah. Wow.
God, that must have taken a lot of coordination.
And they have a lot of me and my trainers as well, because I always run around in my trainers. I'm renowned for running around in my trainers. And I remembered Imran, now the DM for government, once said to me, Joanne, that is so unprofessional. Guess who now runs around in his trainers? That'll be Imran.
Well, maybe that's the secret to success at LSE, a good pair of trainers. And now time for another song. Can you tell me what's the next song you'll be taking with you?
So the next song is Duran Duran, Her Name is Rio. I went to see Duran Duran in the XL. I absolutely loved them. This is one of my favorite songs. Again, I just sing it over and over and over and over. And it just reminds me of being quite a lot younger.
Fab. And then Deputy COO, so you're appointed almost 3 years ago. You said if you had foreseen what you've been doing in COVID, you might have thought twice about taking it up. So how's it been over the past year?
It has been incredible in challenging, good, rewarding ways. I really don't think I would have been able to do this job if I hadn't already been doing it, if you see what I mean. But I think, you know, every day has been different. We've faced some really difficult challenges, but I think LSE has been really organized. I think the communications have been fantastic. I think the teams that have been working, Return to Campus Working Group, Silver Team, all working together for the good of the school. And I found it actually quite often to be enjoyable. I mean, we have a weekly briefing with Andrew and myself, which I find to be collaborative, engaging. I think community is better at LSE. In the recent Values and Practice Awards, we saw staff saying thank you to their colleagues for all the things they've done. It wasn't just about, haven't I done a wonderful job? It was, you know, this was a team effort. And I think that's really come out of COVID. So for me, that's incredibly rewarding and quite inspiring to see. So yeah, it's been challenging. There have been days I've had a wee weep when I've gotten to Friday and I've thought, well, thank goodness this week's over. What have I got to do next week? But I think we've also managed incredibly well and we've adapted. And last year when we were, the first big challenge for me was Welcome last year. And when we thought, oh no, we can't do things in person. I remember Zulam saying to me, but it has to be in person. You know, Welcome is the most important thing that a student has because it's their coming, you know, their arrival, they're here. It's the first time they have community. It has to be in person, Joanne. I was like, I'm afraid to say, Zulam, I don't think it's going to be. And then my heart sank because then I thought, how on earth are we going to do this? But the results from Welcome are incredible. You know, we had President Santos gave a Welcome address which had 15,000 views. Manoush's Welcome address had 30,000 views. Return to Campus, you know, safety around campus, 30,000 views. So, you know, it shows that we can do some things. And, you know, our students were engaged. We would not have had that sort of engagement if they weren't wanting to participate. And whilst it wasn't the community building that we would have normally had in person, I think it really shows what you can do. And I was very proud and very relieved at those results when I sent them to SMC.
My next question is, so being Deputy COO, you work quite closely with Andrew Young, the COO. So what's it like working with Andrew? And am I right in thinking you share an office? Obviously pre-corona.
We did share an office. I think lots of people would quite like to have been a fly on the wall at certain points in our conversations. It's great fun working with Andrew. He is a fantastic boss. I think we work really well together. I hope he'd say the same thing. I think probably I can be a little bit annoying because I'm always like, Andrew. Like, why haven't we done this? Get off my back, Joanne. And then does it. But I think, it's really good. I think my knowledge of LSE is probably really helpful for him in terms of, you know, knowing who to go to, who to ask, whether this is a good idea, would that person be a good fit for this particular thing that we're trying to do. And it's been a real pleasure and it's really enjoyable. I never thought being DCO would be this enjoyable.
Any favourite moments or stories from working alongside Andrew?
Well, I have got one, but I'm not sure this is entirely appropriate. So when I've been working there in the office for about 2 months, I sent an email to my partner who I call Pickle. And it said, Pickle, really missing you, can't wait till the end of the day, XXXXX. And who did I send it to? Andrew Young. Oh, so I sat there, I was literally sweating. I was just like, oh my, no. And someone walked past, one of the PAs walked past and said, Joanne, are you okay? I was like, no. And I was like, come and look at this. And she just sat there and she just laughed. She laughed her head off and walked out and said, bye, Pickle.
Oh my goodness.
That's a memorable moment. I'm not sure, you know.
No, for sure. That's definitely something. It's always, yeah, even I always still get petrified of sending emails now. I always have to check it 3 times just in case. Yeah, I'm going to be even more scared of hearing that story.
Beware teams as well. When you've got a group meeting and you're thinking you're writing to somebody and you write to the entire group, just beware. I've nearly done that as well.
And I've heard that you compare yourself to Rock Copper Penguin.
That's true. So Rockhopper Penguins are kind of crazy. They're little, they're kind of cute. They're good swimmers, but mainly they go and nest they come out of the sea and they go up the mountains, and they're not particularly light on their feet, and they quite often fall back into the sea and get up and then up they go again. And they finally reach the top of the mountain where they go and then lay their eggs. And that's kind of like me. Like I'm always up for a challenge. I don't always get it right. I quite often fall back and then go, oh, cripes alive, what am I going to do now? That welcome being an example of like, cripes alive, what am I going to do now? And then you get up, dust yourself off, and off you go again. And you always get to the top, or try to get to the top. So yes, Rock Up a Penguin is me.
So now, Joanne, your third song.
So my third song is Rachmaninoff. I think you've got a piano piece. I was not a particularly talented pianist. We were brought up classically trained, my brother and I. So I played the piano and the flute. My brother played the piano and the cello. I cannot feel the music. Sorry, I cannot hear the music, but I can feel the music. So my brother can hear a song and just play it on the piano. I'm like, I have no idea. But this particular piano piece I played for grade 7 in my exam. And I can prove that I could feel the music because I got 17 out of 18 for this piece of music. On my oral, I think I failed. I got 12 was a pass and I got 11 out of 19. I think they said something like, can you sing the middle harmony? And I was like, what's the middle harmony? Like, what's the, I don't even know what the top harmony, what's, so of course, just no idea. So that's a, you know, I can feel music, but I can't actually hear it in the same way. So I'm probably tone deaf, hence singing around the house very badly for things like Killers.
No, I can understand this. That's like kinetic learning, isn't it? You can, when you move with your hands and you get things better, but hearing, I'm the same. If someone says something to me, no idea unless it's on paper. Even if I don't look at the paper again, just the process of writing it is what I need to remember. Yes, yeah, so now some student experience stuff. So I've felt since being a student and staff, there's been like a shift in the way LSE views student experience over the years. And I was just wondering if you also felt this shift and what do you think, you know, has caused it to happen?
So I also think that's the case. I think there's been a real shift. I think there are a number of reasons for this, and it's not just this year. I think it's been building. I think having more centrally organised events has made a big difference. I think it means it's a bit more equitable. I think the fact that we work so well with the SU is a real positive. So both welcome that I chair with the SU GenSec and homelessness that I chair with the SU GenSec are real partnerships. It's not them and us, it is we are working in partnership. And I think both of those examples show that we need to respect and work with each other. And the SU, they're close to the students. You know, I'm way out of it. We did something for GradFest, which was a letter in a bottle to myself, and then you get it back in 6 months' time. I thought that would be amazingly popular. No, 20 people did it. So, you know, I'm well out of touch, but the SU and those who have been students quite recently, I think they're really in touch with the student population. And I think their influence on us in the sort of activities and things that we do has had a really positive, beneficial impact. I also think some of the activities we've done this year, throughout the year, post-welcome, the 10K run, the Lucky Dip Adventures, the calligraphy classes, the painting and drawing masterclass. I mean, these are things we would never have done pre-COVID. And those sort of community building activities, for me, in COVID, if one student benefits from one activity, that's good enough for me. But I think loads of students have benefited. The masterclasses for calligraphy were really popular, for painting were really popular, street photography has been really popular. You know, these are things that I think we can build on in the future to make sure that the community that we have from Welcome stays an LSE community throughout the year. And so that students don't just feel part of their department, but they feel part of the LSE community. So for me, this year has been a real eye-opener in terms of the additional things that you can do for not that much money, actually. You can do things relatively cheaply and not being afraid to fail. You know, not everything's been a great success, but we have tried. And the things that don't go well, we won't do again. But things that have gone well, we can do more of and in person. So I think there has been a real shift. And I think I would hope that I've helped to facilitate that in as many ways as I possibly can, because having been a student at LSE, I'm still passionate about the student experience.
Can you now tell me about the fourth song you'll be taking with you?
So my fourth song is Scissor Sisters, Comfortably Numb. It's a Pink Floyd classic. I actually, when I went to see Duran Duran, I believe that the warm-up band was Scissor Sisters. And I was so excited to see Duran Duran, I completely ignored the warm-up band. But again, this is an album I can listen to all the way through. And I love this album and this song.
So previously you were listing a lot of experiences were happening at LSE now. Do you remember any of your favourite experiences whilst you were a student at LSE?
So I lived at Butler's Wharf. I worked in a pub next door. One of my flatmates we had a shared, it was a six of us in a flat, was Professor Henry Overman of the geography department. He was my flatmate when I was at university.
No way.
We had a pretty good time, all of us. We did have a pretty good time. I would spend my day, classes and study at LSE. Then I'd come home, go to the gym. Then I'd do a shift in the pub, and then I'd probably maybe carry on drinking. So I had quite a, in those days, we had a lot of fun in the pubs. I went to the gym every day. I loved living around Butler's Wharf. How lucky is that? It's to walk to LSE every day, through Tower Bridge, London Bridge, just a fantastic walk. I was very happy as a student at LSE. I found it very difficult the first term because I was, that transition from undergraduate to MSc was quite intense for me. And I found LSE a big jump. So my first term I found quite difficult. The second term I absolutely loved. I did my dissertation on vote carouseling, vote rigging in Mexico and Venezuela. And I sort of remember that. I can't remember the outcome, but I sort of remember it. But it was quite interesting. So I loved it, yeah.
And then did you have any favourite spaces on campus then?
That's a good question. LSE was quite a lot smaller when I was a student. I think the George exists, I can't remember. Anyway, well, it wasn't actually on campus. My favourite restaurant was Pooh's, which was a Thai restaurant just up by the ship. It no longer exists, but when I was a student, it was really cheap. And we always go there for meals after studying. So that was my favourite place around campus.
And what if it extended to London? Do you have a favourite place in London?
It wasn't then, but I guess I'm a very outdoory person and I'm really lucky to live where I live. So we literally live 5 minutes from the Olympic Stadium. So we have the Olympic Park at our doorstep. We have the Olympic pool where we swim. Well, we used to swim. And then we have the canal. So we live on the canal. We're on the fourth floor, so we overlook the canal. So no one can ever build right by us. We love the water. And then 10 minutes the opposite direction is Victoria Park, where there are tennis courts. And so it's a beautiful big park. So I guess where we live now, I absolutely love. I'm really happy here. I feel very much at home and I've got everything around me that I could possibly need to satisfy my need for exercise.
And then what's the fifth song you'll be taking with you?
So my fifth song is Jeff Buckley. We think this originated from Leonard Cohen. It's Hallelujah. It's a beautiful song. When I was young, we all went to church. I think that's kind of influenced my moral compass and how I behave as I've got older. I was quite naughty when I was younger, but I think as I've got older, I have, that those sorts of things, those principles and morals that you get when you go to church, I think I've kept. And this vaguely reminds me of being vaguely religious, but more than that, it's just a beautiful song.
When you're younger, you said you did a gap year where you and a friend went traveling, hitchhiking, through South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Namibia. My first question is, did you struggle convincing your parents to let you go? Because I know if I tried that now, my family would, just hitchhiking alone, regardless where it is, I'd be shot down straight away.
What fools were we? I don't think our parents had a lot of choice, actually. I think we were going. We were over 18, we said we were going. I actually, that was the first bit of my tour, which I'll come back to, but I went to New Zealand, Australia, and then came back through the US. So I had a friend who'd done the Prince Edinburgh Award, and she'd been out to, I think Zambia. So she wanted to go back and see them. So we thought, oh hell, we'll do 2 months and we'll hitchhike. So we took we had large rucksacks, we had pots and pans, we had a tent, we had probably had hardly any clothes because how could you have got pots and pans and tents and things in your rucksack? and we flew into South Africa. I think I called my mother like twice in 8 weeks. And then we went into South Africa straight out on the bus because we didn't really want to be in South Africa, straight out to Botswana. And then we just hitchhiked. We went to the Okavango Delta. We went to loads of safari parks just by somebody picking up and say, oh, I'll take you there. I've got a day. And if we didn't get a lift, we just pitched our tent by the side of the road, cooked whatever food we had, and went to sleep and then started hitchhiking again the next day. We always got picked up pretty quickly, apart from I think we slept by the roadside maybe twice. And we'd have people saying, what on earth are you two young ladies doing hitchhiking around Botswana or Zimbabwe or Zambia? Just completely crazy. I look back and I think, I'm much more risk averse now. And I think, what a crazy pair of girls we were. But it was an amazing experience. I look back, I remember it vividly. I remember all the things we did and climbing mountains and just setting up tents. It was life changing. I would never recommend it to anybody ever now.
Were there any close calls, any occasions which wasn't as glorious as, maybe looking back on it?
We had one guy, I was in the front, and one guy had picked us up and he seemed all right. And then he just pulled open the glove compartment and pulled out a knife and said, I've got this if I need it. And I was like, for us? But no, it was like to protect himself and us and put it back into the compartment and shut it. And off we went. I think we probably decided we didn't want to go too far with that particular person and probably said, we'll actually get off, somewhere close by here. It was crazy.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. So I did the similar with RAG, LSE RAG. We got dropped in Lyme Regis and had to hitchhike back to LSE. And that alone was scary. I was going through Bristol. It wasn't even, I was semi-familiar with the area, and that I found quite terrifying. I can't even imagine leaving the UK. Hats off to you for 8 weeks. You did it for
8 weeks. There was another thing.
I did it 12 hours. God, I can't imagine 8 weeks.
We went to see the person who did the Duke of Edinburgh Award. She'd worked with a family, and we went to see the family. As I said, I think it was Namibia. No, it wasn't. It was Zimbabwe. Anyway, we went to see them, and I was vegetarian at the time, as was my girlfriend. And they killed a chicken in our honour and cooked it, and I was like. And what can you do? They killed the chicken in our honor for having visited them.
Yeah, it's not very vegetarian, is it? So now, what number are you on? Six. Can you tell me about the sixth song? Yeah, you'll be taking with you.
So my sixth song, I have to say, I wanted a U2 song. I wanted a, Amy Winehouse song. I wanted loads of songs. But anyway, next song is David Bowie, Life on Mars, because we have to have a bit of Bowie, and what better song than Life on Mars?
A bit of a like a fun, cheesy one, but a classic one I ask is, do you have any pet peeves? Is there anything in the world which bothers you way more than anything else?
I have plenty of pet peeves. The thing that really irritates me is cyclists on footpaths. It drives me bonkers. I can't see why they can't use the roads. I once had, I've had a few altercations, I think one could say, with cyclists on paths, particularly when there's, an empty road beside them and they can't seem to cycle on it. Cyclists in general, I am a cyclist myself. I cycled to LSE for many, many years before I started walking into work the 10 kilometres every morning. Although I think it might be a bit less having done the 10K recently with you. I think it might be more like 7K into work from where I live. But anyway, I once was walking, I used to cycle. So I think cycling is great. But there was once a cyclist, and I was at the zebra crossing walking into LSE, and he went to go across the zebra crossing. And I was like, hang on a sec, it's my right of way. And he was like, no, you're supposed to wait until I stop before you walk. I was like, no, you're supposed to stop until I can walk. So I can walk across the zebra crossing. No, who do you think you are? I was like, read your highway code, and then wandered across the road. So yeah, cyclists behaving badly, I think, is what I'd say. That really, really winds me up.
And then seems like you've already done lots when you're hitchhiking around, but do you have a bucket list, and is there anything you're most keen to tick off?
I don't know if I do, Will. I think So we used to go on Sunsail holidays and then Nielsen's holidays, which are basically sailing and tennis. And I guess we'd go like once or twice a year at least. And I guess I would love to be back where we can do that again. So I guess for me, that would be something that I'd really just really enjoy being able to do and be in the sun, in the sea, doing a little bit of sailing. I'm a very light weather sailor. My partner is a very good windsurfer, and when we go in a boat together, he takes control. But I'm doing those, you know, tennis every day and every afternoon, and great food, and you know, beer sitting on the by the sand and the sea at 6 o'clock before dinner. I guess those things that perhaps, you know, we took for granted years ago, perhaps will be much more special now and be something that I really look forward to doing. I'd also really like to go and spend a long time in New Zealand, because having Kiwi parents, I have the right to a New Zealand passport, which I obviously have, but it's out of date. And so I could go and live and work in New Zealand or Australia, for that matter, without any need to get a visa or a temporary visa or whatever. So I think maybe I'd think about that potentially in the future. And I'd like to go and stay out there just to see if I would like to maybe retire out there. Because London's a bustle, isn't it? And New Zealand's beautiful, but it's also, when I was there last time, it's quite quiet. It's only Auckland that's got that vibrancy. So I think it's changed a lot now, but I'd be quite interested, and I wouldn't mind doing a comment at something like Wellington University or Auckland University. So not exactly bucket list wishes, but things that I'd like to do.
Mm. And now your seventh song.
So my seventh song is Keen, Somewhere Only We Know. And this is a song that my partner and I both really like. And we have that somewhere where we only know.
Final few questions now. So you might have already answered this one, but you've described yourself being LSE through and through. What do you think's kept you over the years at LSE?
It's not just for me that, you know, having this, being in the same place and the surety, it's the community at LSE. I have many, many, many friends at LSE, colleagues who've become friends. I think running the management department was a joy, actually, a real joy. And the community at LSE, you know, we help each other. I could say to pretty much anybody, I think, who I know well enough, please, could you help me do this? Or do you have some advice on that? Or how on earth am I going to achieve this? Or where should I go for that? You know, and there's a real sense that we are there to support each other. Obviously, I don't know any other institution really, because I haven't worked anywhere else. But I think from what I gather from those who maybe come to LSE or who go elsewhere, LSE is a bit unique. It's small enough that you can sort of nearly know everybody. And it's, you know, it's just a really nice place to work. And I love the community and I miss the parties.
But now, last but not least, your eighth and final song.
So my eighth song is Tony Bennett, Let's Face the Music and Dance. It's just a great song, isn't it? I love dancing. Terrible dancer as well, as my partner will tell you. But I just love it. And I think it's a really happy, feel-good record.
Brilliant. So the next
section. And a bit jazzy. A bit of jazz in there.
And you have definitely got a great spread of music. You've got it for all occasions. You're on the island, you've got to make sure you're covered for every mood.
Yeah, exactly.
So as well as the songs, you're provided with the Bible, the beverage report, and a book of your choice. So what is the book you'll be taking with you?
This was very difficult. I wanted to be a writer, I'm an avid reader. I struggled between I love the Shard Lake series by CJ Samson. Philip Pullman was my school teacher. I love his Dark Materials. When I was in middle school, my mum and I contest that, but I was
Philip Pullman. Who's your school teacher?
Philip Pullman was, yeah.
Wow.
The writer, yeah. So I thought about his Dark Materials. I'm a real fan of Hilary Mantel and the Wolf Hall trilogy, but the book I've chosen is my favorite book during lockdown, which is Delia Owens' Where the Crawdads Sing. It's a beautiful story. It's got a bit of crime in there, so it appeals to my crime joy. And it's about a Marsh girl. And I don't want to say too much about it, but it's a beautifully written book. There's nature in there, there's water in there, there's boats in there. It's just a wonderful book. And there's a bit of a love story in it as well.
And what about your luxury item?
So my luxury item is not particularly luxury, but very useful. So obviously I wear glasses. I'm very short-sighted. So my luxury item would be my prescription goggles so that I could see when swimming in the sea. I'd also be able to see oncoming sharks. I might be able to catch some food. I certainly would be no good in the water without those prescription goggles. So that's my luxury item.
And it provides you a lot of fun as well. You can go, well, not snorkeling, but I suppose, yeah, you can go underwater and
sort of, yeah.
And favourite meal?
Well, this is really not very refined, I'm afraid, Will. But steak, chips, mushroom sauce. But it has to be rump or fillet steak. It has to be nice chips. It has to be a beautiful mushroom sauce with a tomato on the side. I don't have it very often because obviously I don't eat very much red meat anymore. But if I had a treat, an absolute treat, that would be my favourite meal that I would most pine for on a desert island.
You got me on chips, anything with chips involved. And then finally, your quote of choice.
So this again was difficult for me because I always say things like, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, when we do welcome, I have Julian Robinson and we say, there's a will, there's a way. And I thought about what goes around comes around. But I actually settled on treat others as you would like others to treat you. So I like to think that I treat people in a way that I would be happy to be treated myself. So that was what I settled on.
Fabulous. Well, that brings us to the end, Joanne. Thank you very much for telling me about your Geography Island Jams.
It's been a pleasure being here, Will.